He had the virtual, like, sex doll, in a sense, because he had the thing on his crotch and he had, you know, he was squeezing the squeezy things.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Hey, Ted, it's another week, and I want to welcome to everybody. Well, maybe not I want to welcome. How about we welcome everybody to episode 41?
Episode 41, Mr. Van Cura.
Yeah. Mr. Willett. Yeah, Teddy.
Let's get formal. Yeah. Let's get formal here.
Yeah. So, hey, how have you been this past week?
I'm really, really sore. Remember last week I started a new workout.
I heard.
Ryan has been working out, and he's actually listening to the podcast a little bit, and we're talking Creed 2.
So, are you looking to be a lean, mean fighting machine?
Yes.
Nice, nice. Well, you know, you got the 6 to 8 week training program.
Great lift last week. Cool. So what's been going on for your week?
So getting a lot of yard work done and everything, but I got Clarissa and myself on this app, this new app for bicycling called Ride Report. Mm-hmm. And I just want to, you know, for the record, I have no affiliation with them whatsoever. I don't even know like how they monetize it. Maybe they sell the data that they collect like everyone else. But the thing about it, though, is it like auto starts when you start riding.
Uh-huh.
It tracks your ride. You know, Big Brother's watching, but it tracks your ride. And what it does is it then like, well, it's like a lot of apps. They give you like trophies and hey, you rode like 10 miles in a day. Here's a trophy, you know, like whatever, you know. But what it'll do is it like creates like a database of all the people in your community who ride.
Mm-hmm.
And then it shares it with your city and everything so they can collect data on bicycling. And then they could say like, these people are riding these routes and X number of people are riding these routes. And the route is like, you know, like not great or it's good enough or whatever. But anyway, so I found this app and I turned Clarissa onto it and we've just been like getting our mileage in. And for the month of September, I have about like 210 miles. Well, Clarissa's beaten me. She's close to like 300, you know? So my wife is like...
I didn't know it was a contest.
I didn't either, but apparently my wife is like destroying me on miles, you know, but, but yeah, so, you know, we ride all the time and this app is cool because it like records and the nice thing about it though is like Strava and all these other types of, you know, bicycling and running apps, you have to start them, you have to stop them, you have to like be involved.
Oh yeah.
This is like running in the background using almost no energy, you know, no juice off your battery. And it's always looking for a new ride. And I'll have to say, man, it is like spot on accurate. It gets when you get going. It knows when you stop. And it tracks the miles like super accurate. And it knows like when you ride in inclement weather because it's like cross databasing with like, you know, weather apps or something. And it's cool.
But you're in Southern California, so there's no such thing as like bad weather or weather period.
Well, I guess more like we're on the the Central Coast. And being on the Central Coast, it's like 65 to 75, like almost year round. So yeah, we have pretty... We have pretty like nice weather, you know.
That's funny. How does it work? Is it on your tire or is it?
No, like, it's on your phone.
On your body? Oh, it's on your phone. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, it's just it's a phone app. So like they have it for Android, Apple, you know, iOS. And what it does is, I guess it's always looking for, you know, because your phone has like all these like sensors,
gyroscopes. Yeah.
Yeah, gyroscopes and sensors, and GPS. It has like all this stuff that it incorporates, and it must somehow, I don't know how, but it like automatically figures out that you're like moving on a bicycle. But what it'll do is it also tracks when you're in a car and it gives like, oh, well, this was a car ride. And if it misinterprets what you're on, it'll ask like, was this a car ride or was this a bike ride?
Right.
But it'll say like, oh, that was a car ride. So now it's comparing like, well, you have like this number of bike rides versus this number of car rides. All of these bike rides have saved this much CO2.
Oh, so it's guilting you into like, why are you riding the car?
Yeah. This one car ride wiped out all your CO2 savings for the month because you went like a mile in a car and it just destroyed everything you've done. So, you know, whatever. But no, it's cool though. Ride report. Anybody out there riding, I would recommend it. And again, like I said, I have no affiliation. I don't know anything about it. I don't even know how I found it. I think I was like Googling around for like riding apps or something and poof, this thing popped up.
Is it a free anyway, app?
It's free. Yeah, it's free.
Wow.
I think they monetize like cities, like get data from them to help build bicycle infrastructure and stuff. And I think cities pay for like the information or something. I'm really not sure how it works, but how they're monetizing. But I think it's like through the University of Oregon or something like that.
Cool.
I don't know. But hey, it works. So how about you, man? I heard you were on a CSUN panel last week and the TIFO, Things I Found Online podcast last week.
Yeah, so it was a nice, busy week for me. As we said, I was going, speaking of universities, I went to both of our alma mater, California State University Northridge, for their entertainment industry symposium, and where I talked about the future of media. So they didn't record it, but as I spoke to all the students, it's a recap. If you guys listen to the podcast, you hear the bits and pieces that I share over here on a week-to-week basis, but I was just a little more concise over there because we only had about an hour to share. But it was fun. It's really fun to have students come up to you afterwards and say like, oh, it's so inspiring, you know? You know, our lives are, you know, it's a slog, you know, you get through it and you make it as good as you can. But a lot of times life can feel like a slog. So to have students that have, you know, that are in school and chomping at the bit to get into the workforce, it's interesting to see them and to say like, oh, look, this guy's working in the entertainment industry and it's really cool. And I'm like, all right, well, keep that alive. Keep the hope alive.
And Ted has a podcast, so he must be a celebrity, you know?
Exactly.
Right.
And because we had the podcast, I was, you know, that helped getting invited to the CSUN panel. And it also helped this week, the TIFO podcast, the Things I Found Online podcast, had a podcast about podcasting. So they called me on Monday and it shoots on Tuesday and it airs on Thursday. And I said, sure, let's go.
So it happened really fast.
Yeah. And I showed up, but it was cool because I was like, oh, it's a podcast about podcasting. Let me call my friend from CSUN who is working at Benstown. And Benstown is a packaging service, an imaging service, I think they call it, where they put together radio bumpers and radio, everything between the music Benstown produces. So you can hire them to put together packages, and they have a podcast division. So my buddy is the VP of sales and marketing over there, and he, you know, was happy to send another one of his guys over there to help us talk about podcasting in this space.
So is he the man with no hair?
He is. He is,
okay.
He is the man with no hair on purpose, as you know, sitting next to me, the guy with what did you call it? A six head?
Oh yeah. Well, you know, most people have a four head, but Ted has a five head. No, but that guy looked really familiar for some reason. I don't know where I've seen him before, but maybe I've seen him nowhere, and he just looks like somebody. But he looks really familiar.
Yeah. No, he's just a nice smiling face, so that's probably why.
Yeah. No, it was really I don't know, informational, I guess. And
yeah,
I like how, as like Jack Daniel was talking about, like with sound and everything, he's like, there are people who have poor mic etiquette and you hear a lot of mouth noise and you hear a lot of like echoes and they're too far from the mic and they like shout into the mic. And
yeah,
you know, there's a lot of things that people do with microphones that don't necessarily work well when you look at like recording sound and everything. And, you know, I like how you brought in how it's important to get the sound right. And you thought that just the content alone, you were so profound that what you knew would get everybody listening, and sound be damned, you know? And like, I just kept driving home, like, we got to get the sound, you know? And then at some point, Ted became the boy in the well or something, you know, because he had the echoes going on and... And hey, we're not perfect week in, week out. We still screw up. And I mean, sound is so hard. But I think we're like getting the sound dialed in. And I think, you know, once we get that sound like right and we can do it consistently, like I think that's where a lot of podcasts fail.
Yeah. No, it was great because something a little behind the scenes of from the TIFO podcast, Wheezy has a great setup there. I don't know if you saw it, the big panel table with all the great mics. But even with the good mics, Jack Daniel brought in his own mic. So he has his own mic and
I noticed.
He plugs it in because he's a VO guy, you know?
Yeah.
So it was awesome.
Well, yeah, I totally noticed. I'm like, why is his mic different, you know? But yeah, you know, and the thing is, like, there are so many podcasts that I listen to, and I would say the ones that I'm most engaged with and the ones that I enjoy the most are the ones that have the best sound. And there have been podcasts that I've turned on and I wanted to try out and stuff, you know, and you didn't podcast, you know, they're trial and error. I mean, if you're into it, you're into it. If you're not, you're not. You just move on. But the ones that I think have the best magic is they have the great content and the great sound. And people that have good content but horrible sound, you might stick in an episode or two, but over the long haul, I mean, it's just going to give you a headache.
I can't do it. I mean, there are podcasts out there that the content is content that I want to listen to.
100%.
But I cannot, I do it week in, week out. I try it. And out of a 30-minute podcast, I listen to 5 minutes of it, and I have to turn it off. I just can't do it.
It hurts your ears. You know, it gives you a headache. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, and I guess, you know, just to kind of end it at this, you know, the one thing that Ted and I try and do is, you know, have good sound. And I mean, the weeks that we don't, I hope people forgive us, you know, like everybody who's listening forgives us. But we really do work hard at trying to get the sound. We've invested in good mics and good preamps to get the sound into our computers and software. And we spend the time, you know, and we've researched it and stuff. And we do try and do it, you know. I mean, but I tell you though, even though all these things come in, there's some weeks when like, who knows, like the gremlins get in there and just like screw everything up and we do what we can to salvage it, you know?
Yeah, no, it's amazing. It's a struggle, and it's a struggle for veteran podcasters too. I mean, you point out all the time, you know, the guys that have been doing it for 5-6 years, they still have to apologize about the sound for half of a show or something, or, you know, and they just have to put it out because they recorded it and they want to, you know, they have obligations to keep going as well.
And you're so right about that. I think one of the other big things too that you mentioned last week was how dedicated podcasters can be, like the people who do it week in, week out consistently. Like there's some podcasts I've listened to since like when podcasting began in 2004, and they go on like week in, week out, never missing. I mean, like literally 52 weeks a year, never taking like a week off. And I'm like, when do they take vacations? You know, they must put things in the can. I don't know. But the main thing about it, though, is they have so much time invested in their podcast, and they're so dedicated. Like, you made the comment that I didn't think we could put it out 1 week, and you said, hey, you know, as long as it's out on Thursday, it still drops on Thursday. It might not be at 2 a.m. like we normally do, but, you know, like, we drop it at 2 a.m. every Thursday, you know, so this way, when you get up, it's there for your ride into work, your commute on the train, or whatever you're doing, wherever you live in the world,
yeah.
And so we base it on the Eastern Standard Time, 5 a.m. commute time, let's say, right? So anybody in New York, Washington, D.C., they can listen on their way into work. And, you know, obviously, if you're in London or something, well, you're going to catch it the next morning. But the bottom line with that is we don't want to miss a week because, like, we are dedicated to it and we want to get it out there. And it's something that we want to be consistent with. And I think most podcasters who are serious about what they're doing, I mean, they're getting it in week in, week out, and they just don't miss a week, you know? All right, Ted.
So are we switching to beers now? Let's switch to beers.
Yeah, let's do beers really quick. And well, maybe not really quick. I want to savor it a little bit.
Can I start with my beer?
By all means, go for it.
So my beer ties together your past two beers.
Oh, okay.
So last week you had Mission Brewery, right?
Yeah, I did.
You had Shipwrecked.
Shipwrecked, yeah.
So today I have Mission Brewery 9 Plunder IPA. So the Mission Brewery, obviously the same brewery as your beer from last week. And then 2 weeks ago, you had a beer. What was that thing called? The Firestone? What's the name of it? The Scudder? The Scuba? The
Sakaba? Sakaba? Sakaba?
Sakaba.
Yeah. It was a barley wine.
Yeah. I'll put the picture of this label up.
Okay.
But this label says 9 Plunder. You can see it on Slack. 9 Plunder IPA. So if you look at the P, it actually has the 9 integrated with the P. So it's another hard to read name for a beer. So Mission Brewery 9 Plunder.
Read it before you start drinking.
And last week I had the 789 glass. Today I'm going with a smaller glass. So it feels like I'm having two beers in my Stiegel. What is this called? What kind of beer cup glass is this?
I don't know. What is that? A Pilsner glass?
Yeah, Pilsner glass. I guess I shouldn't be drinking this in that, but whatever.
And how big is that bottle?
It's just a 12 ouncer.
Okay. That's what I have tonight too. So tonight's a small beer night. All right. Well, we'll let the head go down.
It has to be with this workout. I'm killing myself.
So what I have tonight is some Black Gold. And so Santa Maria, California is the town just north of us. And they have a brewery in town called, Santa Maria Brewery. And Black Gold is, it's a chocolate porter. And let me see here. I just saw it and I'm missing. Oh, there we go. It's 6% alcohol by volume, 39 IBUs. So this is the first time I've had anything by their brewery. And like I said, they're just north of us, like 30-minute drive, probably less. So we'll see how it is. Maybe I'll get some more beers from them. But anyway.
Awesome.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That smells good. It smells portery. You know, like malty and grainy. You know what I mean? Not hoppy like an IPA. So I'll let that head go down. So how does yours taste?
So mine is a bold IPA. It's not your full hazy, but it's not, you know, crystal clear. So it's a bounty of 9 bold hops, it says.
9 different hops?
9 different hops. And it makes for a very complex, but just a crisp, still clean, crisp taste. It's not double hopped. So it's not your full IBUs. Only 7% alcohol by volume. I don't even see the IBUs on it, but it wouldn't be that high.
You got a 7% beer. I mean, it's pretty potent. All right, let's see here. The black gold.
Black gold coming down.
Let's see how it tastes. Oh yeah, you have a hint of chocolate nibs, almost coffee.
Wow,
there's some coffee in there. Really smooth. A little bit bitter on the beginning, but it totally finishes off really nice. So as it goes back, and it doesn't hang with you. So like a few seconds later, like the taste almost dissipates, like getting you ready for the next sip.
There you go.
Definitely a solid beer. One more sip there. Yeah, it is. It, you know, it has a slight bitterness to it, but not so much so like you'd have like a heavy IPA or something. But
almost like a dark chocolate bitter.
Yeah. Like a dark chocolate bitter. Exactly. I mean, and it's seriously like chocolate. Like if you enjoy a chocolatey beer, like the Santa Maria Black Gold is definitely one I would recommend. And like with every beer we're drinking, we have no affiliation. But
but they're more than welcome to send us anything if you know, if they feel it.
Oh, I won't turn down free beer. And I'll still rate it the way I want to rate it.
You said that the bitterness of dark chocolate. When we're at Trader Joe's, I'll get like the 90% cacao chocolate.
Oh, I love that.
I know I can keep that in my house. But I can keep it in my house, and I'm the only one that will eat that. It's like the kids don't steal that.
Yeah, that's the brilliance of it. All right, so we had a review, a review. We've had a lot of reviews lately, so we feel like we've banked enough that it's probably time to maybe like read off one a week or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had one from Millennial Siskel and Ebert. Dylanopoulos? Is that how you pronounce that? Dylanopoulos? It sounds Greek to me. So anyway, Dylanopoulos says, genuinely enjoyed listening to this pair discuss their opinions of Jack Ryan. So he probably listened a couple weeks ago. I was surprised by their beer tasting interlude. Looking forward to more. So, you know, I guess the beer thing maybe is taking off a little bit. People probably likely hearing a brief discussion of beer.
Yeah, and that's from Fake Headlines Podcast, another podcast friend of ours.
So. Oh. Okay.
Give him a little shout out.
So wait a minute. What's Millennial Siskel and Ebert?
That's the title of the review. They're calling us millennials.
Oh, I got you. Like, I didn't even catch that because, like, I'm so not a millennial. I'm like a late Gen Xer, you know?
Are you a baby boomer? No, I'm just kidding.
No, I'm a Gen Xer, but, you know, I was... You know,
I know, hell, I know,
man. Yeah. Oh, so we're Millennial Siskel and Ebert. Wow, I totally missed that. Jeepers.
I think we're a Siskel and Ebert for the Millennial trailer set.
Got it.
But hey, I'm just reading into the Fake Headlines Podcast a review a little bit there. But thank you for the review.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for the 5 stars as always. And like, if you listen to this, we love reviews. We love hearing from you guys. So definitely. Write it up on iTunes.
And, you know, and even like I said in the past, like if you don't like it or there's something you'd like to hear different or you have a critique, you know, be respectful. But yeah, we'd love to hear because it's only going to help make our show better.
Right.
All right, Teddy.
Right before we get into Bumblebee, I have some breaking news that came across today. Liberty Media is the parent company of Sirius XM, and Sirius XM today acquired Pandora, the music streaming service, which also streams podcasts, for $3.5 billion in stock.
Wow.
So that's kind of like in the media space if DirecTV were to buy Hulu or something like that.
Wow, 3.5 billion or million?
Billion with a B.
Whoa, man, that's incredible. So just when you thought like satellite radio was over, you know, because of all the internet and streaming stuff, like they come out like, where did they get the cash from?
Well, that's why it's all stock. I don't even know. It's like a stock swap acquisition. So who knows how the deal is structured, but that's their hedge, I guess, against satellite, and they can be satellite or you know, just streaming terrestrial, or I don't even know how Pandora goes across. But there you go. That's a quick little hit on the news of the media space, and I think audio is media, just like anything else.
For sure.
We're not on Pandora. I think we should get on Pandora now.
Can we get on Pandora?
Yeah, they have podcasts. We just got on iHeartRadio last week, so we need to add a little logo to our website and get that up and running there too.
Well, I did put iHeart on the website.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did.
When?
I don't know, a couple days ago.
Okay, good. So our first movie of the week is Bumblebee.
Yeah, let's get into that really quick. We don't have to do a lot because we did cover the teaser back a number of episodes ago. I don't remember which episode. I forgot to look it up. Maybe you can find it while I sit there and chit-chat. Okay, so I have a couple of things. One, and you've been watching a lot of Transformer movies lately with your kids.
Yes.
Who's the deep sounding voiceover guy that tells Bumblebee to protect the Earth and the people?
Optimus Prime.
Oh, that's Optimus Prime. Okay.
That is Optimus Prime, yeah.
Got it. Okay, number two. If Bumblebee were never purchased by the girl, would he have stayed dormant throughout this whole like battle that everyone's looking for him?
No, because Spike would have gotten him.
Okay, so he still would have come alive.
I think so.
Okay, number three. A beetle, a Volkswagen Bug, like say, I don't know what exact year he is, but let's say a 1970 Volkswagen Bug, I'll even call him a super beetle, has about a 60 horsepower motor. And it's not very big, right? So he's fighting like F-18s and all these old cars and all this stuff that's way bigger than he is, but like he's kicking all their asses. Like, could a bug really do that to like a Dodge Charger?
No, but a bumblebee could.
Okay, which brings me to number four. If he's a beetle, why is he then Bumblebee? Why isn't he a beetle?
Yeah, I don't know. Let's
okay.
Let's not overthink that one.
Okay.
Oh, because he's yellow. He's a yellow bug. So he's like a yellow beetle.
Well, okay, sure. What? There's no. There's like what 800 species of beetle in the world. Like, there's not a yellow one. Number five. I'm on number five. Number five for those who are counting. So Bumblebee transforms in the garage of this girl, and she stands there and thinks, oh, well, this is what happens every day. I just have one question, like, who are you or what are you? And then when she tells her friend, which is like 5 and a half, maybe, she tells her friend, you know, and you see it in the trailer, and her friend goes, really? He's from another world? How do you know? Whatever he says, right? Like, if you told people that your old Honda transformed into some robot and you're at work, do you not think that the people at work are going to be like, sure, Ted, your Honda's turning into a robot. I got that, you know? But like, if it were me and like I'm outside and my little Ford Focus starts, you know, into a robot, I am not going to stand there to find out like, well, let's see what it has to say to me. You know, I mean, it's like feats don't fail me now. I am out of here. I'm getting my family and I'm out the door. I don't even care if this thing's good or bad or indifferent. Like, I don't even want to know. Like, my car is changing.
Is that why you like bicycles?
Dude, if my bike was changing into a robot, I would still hightail it. My bike should not be changing into a robot.
Yes, these are all very good points. I don't know where it puts us. I was a little upset at Charlie Watson or whatever the girl's name is because I wanted Spike in a construction helmet from my animated TV series days back in the day. Because I was the original owner of Bumblebee.
Yeah, and what we didn't see was Bumblebee in the Jeep helmet. I know it has like the Bumblebee helmet and it has like the cutesy Bumblebee helmet or face, but it didn't have the Jeep one that we saw in the teaser.
Well, didn't he? Right, the Jeep one. Yeah, and then he does put on, like, when he's gonna fight John Cena, he puts on a different helmet.
Yeah, it's like the Bumblebee one. It's like it goes into, like, you know, like, I don't know, minus the antennas, a Bumblebee face.
I like to think during the filming of Austin Powers, apparently there were like 11 fake sets of fake teeth that Austin Powers would use as depending on how gnarly he wanted to be. So I like thinking that Bumblebee's helmets are a lot like that. You know, one for every occasion.
Yeah. And, you know, the one thing that we've been covering a number of Marvel movies, and we're going to be getting into some more Marvel, but this movie kind of reminds me of like the Marvel universe in a sense, you know, as does all these kind of movies, because they fall under what I call the genre that I call the explosion movie genre. So it's going to be another one of those. We need to destroy the earth to
save it,
to save the earth. Right. Yeah. So everything is going to blow up just so it doesn't blow up. I don't know. But like, it's just another one of those kind of movies where you know, and then the other thing, too, when you look at like the soldiers and the general and all this stuff, and it's like, you know, it's like, here come these space aliens that land and start talking to people, and like, no one freaks out. Like, everyone is so calm. Like, oh, well, okay, you know, we have this transformer thing that was once an airplane and now it's talking to me. Yeah, I'll negotiate with you. I mean, it's just so bizarre to me. Like, and then what it got me thinking of is like War of the Worlds, like the original War of the Worlds. You know, and the panic that ensued with the aliens in War of the Worlds when they came down killing everybody and all this stuff. That's exactly what you would expect, is like panic, not just people having a conversation with a robot. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I would agree. And that's, you know, that's part of your suspension of disbelief,
I suppose. Yeah.
You know, you want to just play in this world. And this is a space where, for the first time, we're going to get a little more touchy-feely with the Transformers and a little more emotional with them. So I like the idea of Michael Bay has had his long, long run of doing Transformer movies. This is the first non-Michael Bay movie. And your kids are too young to have seen Kubo and the Two Strings. Have you seen that?
No, we haven't.
Yeah. Well, Kubo and the Two Strings is just this beautiful, not claymation, but it is, maybe it is claymation. It's a claymation, animation, papermation movie about a boy and his journeys with a samurai. And it's just a beautiful story. It's very dark. It has a couple witches in it that are very, very dark. And the boy is in a lot of peril throughout. So even my 9-year-old at the time, he was probably like 6 or 7. He was a little tentative about it. So I think it's a tough one to watch with little kids, but it's a great story and it's a great family story. And I like the idea of, like, you know, of Charlie asking Bumblebee, where's your family? Where's your backup? And he's like, you know, you're my backup, you know, Charlie, you're it, you know? So I love the deep, deep tie that they kind of put together. And when they show, so in all the past Transformers, like I said, I've seen a lot of them recently, you know, they have the names of the Transformers, they have the voices, they had the audio, they had the mechanical transforming down to a science through all the movies, but none of the movies had the characters looking like Gen 1 1980s Transformers.
Right.
And when I saw Soundwave, when you see Soundwave with a cassette jumping out of his chest, it is the right level of nostalgia. And I think nostalgia is a huge space right now. It's very hot right now to be nostalgic and to be thinking about things, you know, from the 80s and the 90s. And we're getting into the mid 90s later on today. And, you know, nostalgia, if you can do it right, like last week when we were talking about hitting the blockbuster with Captain Marvel, then it'll hit the right note. And I think this hits the right note of nostalgia in the right place. You know, Starscream looks like Starscream. Bumblebee, he looks he's a little more stylized than what I remember, but at least he's a bug. At least he's a VW. So, and then, like, just like I said, Soundwave was one of my favorite action figures when I was growing up, a little boombox with the actual cassettes that were also Transformer animals inside of him. I think Laserbeak was one of my favorites. But yeah, I was nerding out over that and very, very excited to see this one. I know it's going to be different. It looks different. It feels different. And it's an exciting space.
Well, and the end is really cute, if you want to call a Transformer cute. But, like, he's kind of peeking through the cat door or the dog door or whatever. And it's kind of like, well, I'm out here and I want to come in there. And he kind of, like, busts his way in and he's bumping in everything. And in a sense, it's like, here's a space I don't belong, but
yeah,
because you're here, I'm going to be with you. And I don't know, we'll see. I mean, the thing about the Transformers movies, Michael Bay or otherwise, I've seen one of them. I don't remember which one. I think it was the first one that came out.
Right.
The 2007 with the Camaro. But as time goes on and my boys get older, I'm sure, like, there's no way around watching them. And that's fine. You know, I'll watch them. I don't have a problem with that. But chances are highly likely that I'm not going to be watching it, you know, at this go around at Christmas. But at the same time, like, maybe like 5 Christmases from now when they're old enough, then we're going to probably binge, you know, all of the Transformers.
The old ones.
To include this one and whatever future ones are going to come from here.
Right. And I do also love the comedic touch of the final scene. I did think it felt like they were kind of stealing or giving an homage to kind of like a Big Hero 6.
Okay, yeah.
Doesn't it? It feels kind of like a Baymax space. Are you familiar? Did you see Big Hero 6?
Yeah.
So it feels like Baymax, where Baymax is, you know, completely unassuming but kind of a bulky character moving around in space and not knowing that he's knocking over things, you know. So yeah, I love loved it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, my final comment, you know, and this is just more of a general comment about the genre of this movie, is that these things are just like a sound engineer's wet dream. I mean, like, you know, there are so many sound effects in just a transforming period, not to mention the shooting and the exploding and the chasing and the run, you know, the Foley. I mean, the whole thing is like sound engineers just must love these kind of movies because it's like, you know, just a free for all. Just go for it, you know?
I think in preparation of a quiet space, Quiet Place.
Quiet Place, yeah.
Yeah, Quiet Place coming out. I saw a BTS of the Foley for A Quiet Place, and it talk about how much fun can you have with Foley. You know, this guy's crushing lettuce. He's cracking crab legs, you know what I mean? It's ridiculous, the food and groceries that he's wasting to do Foley for A Quiet Place.
These guys must just like live for sound effects, you know?
Sound nerds.
Yeah, totally cool. All right. Yeah. I mean, you know, you're going to see it. I'm not saying I'm not going to see it, but I will see it probably like in 5 years from now.
Eventually. Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. So now we go from something that's doing nostalgia right to maybe something that's missing the mark on nostalgia.
Well, Ted, have you noticed, before we get into that, have you noticed what we haven't seen for a while?
What's that?
The trailer to the trailer.
Oh, I know. Oh, yes, you're right.
Yeah, we haven't had, like, I mean, it maybe has been, what, like 5 weeks or something, 8 weeks or whatever. Well, we were gone over July, but it's been a good long while since we saw a trailer to the trailer. And, you know, a matter of fact, the last Tom Cruise movie, I think, was where the helicopter was coming down the hill, I think was the last trailer to the trailer that we talked about and encountered.
Yeah, and it was actually Bumblebee does a little bit of a title package, a title treatment, but it's not at all a trailer to the trailer.
Whatever they're doing, even if there is something they're putting in there that's more subliminal, let's say, like, it's totally not noticeable, because before I felt like I was just getting beat over the head with that stuff. And now whatever they're doing is a lot more seamless, you know?
The industry and the executives and all of the trailer monkeys and trailer cutters are getting the notes, and they know that this time has passed. The one note that Dark Phoenix is the next trailer we'll cover. The Dark Phoenix did not get the note about slowdown covers. That's a trope that has now, I think it's completely run its course.
Of the Doors.
They use the Doors, This Is the End, which I forever will associate with Apocalypse Now.
Right, right.
So it has that Apocalypse Now feel, and for Apocalypse Now, it makes sense. And for this movie, it could make sense, but it's the cover and the way that it's done. If it was just straight up Doors, I mean, This Is the End is already a slow song. You don't need to slow it down and have a woman singing it. You know what I mean? It is quintessential in its cinematic experience already. So you're forcing an audience to shed any kind of association they have with this movie in cinematic history and put it in a new space, or try to have some new association with it. Or you're just ignoring those people and you're putting them into a new space. But I think it's a complete miss on this trailer, and I was not a fan of the cover or the speed at which it played or the fact that they used it at all. And if they used it, I think go for the original. Did you like it?
Yeah, totally agreed.
Yeah.
I think that the song itself was too slow, which led into the trailer being a little bit slow.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, basically, what this trailer, or I should say all this trailer did, was make me miss Game of Thrones that much more. Saying, like, when is the next season coming out? Like, you guys are putting her, you know, Sansa Stark. What's her name? I'd have to look
Jean
it
Grey?
Up.
Which one? Jean Grey or her name in Game of Thrones?
No, Sansa Stark is her name in Game of Thrones, but whatever, I didn't look it up. I can't remember her name outright, but all it did was make me say, you know, like, you have her in this and you're stalling for putting out a Game of Thrones, you know, like, and then they had the lame kind of X-Men, like 1980s costumes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is what I'm talking about. Like, her name is Sophia Turner.
So there you go. There you go.
Yeah. But when we talk about having the throwback, the Gen 1 Transformers in Bumblebee, and how good that feels, you see these costumes, and I feel pain in saying that I agree with the internet when the internet says, wow, these costumes look cheap and they look, you know, retro in the wrong way. You know, it's like they took a wrong turn when they were trying to be nostalgic. And it pains me to say that, knowing that there's craftsmen and there's artists and there's all these people in the business working together to try to come up with this product. And they're not doing it in a vacuum. No costume director is off there just doing their own thing. They're submitting, you know, renders. They're submitting different cuts of this outfit into executives that approve this stuff. So I put it squarely on their shoulders that this is not the final product that I think anybody wanted.
And it's cut, the outfits and the uniforms and the costumes, however you want, you know, the costume design and everything, it almost reminds me of like Galaxy Quest, you know,
yeah,
where you're doing like
a parody of it,
a parody of Star Trek, you know, and it's like, but like Star Trek was like the real deal back in the 60s, you know, where it's like,
yeah. Yeah.
They just had what they had and they made it what they made it. But by the time you get to I don't know when Galaxy Quest was, like, what, 99, 2000, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden Galaxy Quest comes out and it's like, bam, here's your outfit. And it's supposed to be like old school Star Trek, you know?
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. I think Galaxy Quest as a movie unto itself is an amazing movie. So definitely like that. 1999. Well, you're spot on.
You fact check me.
But yes, I just think it's a miss. I think, you know, it, like the trope of the song and then this trying to be nostalgic but missing the mark. The fact that this story has kind of been told in another X-Men movie, it's been told in The Last Stand with Famke Janssen as Jean Grey. And I mean, she's phenomenal, a phenomenal actress. So when I was tweeting about my first thoughts, my TGP hot take on this, I was definitely saying that Famke Janssen did it better as far as I was concerned. I guess you're a fan of Sophia Turner from Game of Thrones, but
oh yeah,
I just like Famke. I think she had a more of a smolder than I get from Sophia.
Sure.
The one, so here's the highlight. The highlight for me in this whole trailer was this origin story of her tragically killing her parents, maybe by accident or something like that. But the way that they play that moment out for me is phenomenal. I love car wrecks in movies. Like, the way that they play car wrecks in movies and TV shows is phenomenal to me. I think there's something very visceral. There's something real about, you know, we spend so much time in cars. Well, maybe not you. But normal people that commute, you know, spend a lot of time in cars. And when you're in a car, you're very vulnerable and you don't know it until you're in a car accident. And just to see car accidents in TV shows and in movies is just something that's very easy to associate with.
Yeah. And I think the thing about cars and car wrecks, and like you said, there's something visceral about it, is that, like, you don't realize the power that you have. And when you're cruising along at a rate of speed, it's like you're sitting on your sofa because you really don't feel the speed, right? So if you think about, like, you know, F equals MA, right? Force equals mass times acceleration. You're looking at like two 4,000 pound vehicles going at 35 miles an hour. Well, you're that's 8,000 pounds at 70 miles an hour combined force. And then, like, you know, you multiply that, you're looking at like 56,000 pounds of force, like, colliding. You know what I mean? Like, if you just do the quick multiplication.
It reminds me, when we were growing up, I don't know if you saw this public service announcement, but there was a PSA on when we were kids, where there was a woman sitting in the back seat with a baby in her lap. And they said, like, the commercial was like, don't put a baby in your lap, you know, because this is like before car seats and stuff like that, or car seats were new to the game. And it says, during an accident, a baby's mass, you know, becomes that, like, 300 pounds or 400 pounds. And they switched, like, the car's about to be in an accident and the baby turns into a sumo wrestler on top of her lap. So it was kind of a great.
I wish I saw that.
It was a great visual to be like, unless you can hold a sumo wrestler from leaving your lap, you know, your baby's not safe.
Well, and here's the crazy thing, right? So I'm a kid. It's the 70s, like, I don't know, 79 or something, 78, whatever.
Yeah.
And my grandfather had a 1975 Cutlass Supreme. So you had, like, it was a bench seat, and you had, like, the driver's seat, and you had the passenger seat, and right in the middle was an armrest. And you put down the armrest.
Uh-huh.
So what does my grandfather do? He puts down the armrest and says, Jim, they made a seat just for you. Like, I'm the first one through the windshield if they crash. My God, what are these people thinking, you know? Like, now that you look back on it, right? Like, how did we even survive? It's amazing.
You'd be a projectile straight through the windshield.
I would have been right through the windshield, man. But hey, so Patrick Stewart retired from the franchise, it looks like, huh?
Well, this is that new phase. So they've had this for the past few movies where McAvoy is the Professor Xavier. He's been doing it for a number of movies. So, yes, they did a couple, one or two crossover movies where they had both Patrick Stewart. Oh, and yeah, I guess Wolverine, Logan was the swan song for both Patrick Stewart as Xavier and Hugh Jackman as Wolverine.
So Hugh Jackman's done then too.
That's my understanding.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting when they're in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, when they join the Marvel Cinematic Universe, how this is going to play out. Oh, but the quick thing. So that car accident, I love the idea of her clicking her shoes together, because the one thing that worked in this trailer for me was the idea of her clicking her shoes together like Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, I thought the same, yeah.
Her shoes are white, not ruby, right? And she's actually, like, destroying her family instead of going home, you know what I mean? Like, she clicks her heels together to destroy her family. And then the very next line is Jessica Chastain saying, you're not home here. You're not home. So it's like Jean Grey does what Dorothy does, and yet it has the unintended consequence of destroying her life. So it kind of sets up this tragic anti-hero of Phoenix, of Dark Phoenix. And I just, that's a nice encapsulated moment within this trailer. But we put a poll out online to compare Captain Marvel to Dark Phoenix, the trailers. I said, who trailered better? And it was 75% for Captain Marvel, 25% for Dark Phoenix. And the hate and the people that just don't like anything that Fox does with these Marvel characters, everyone's ready for Marvel Studios to take over production of everything. And that's the hope with the acquisition of Fox.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I mean, I think the Captain Marvel trailer was much better than this. I think the Dark Phoenix trailer, they tried to keep slow and slow down further, and especially slowing down the Adore song that's already slow, like you mentioned. And it's just,
Yeah.
You know, I think they're trying to bring more drama and dramatic effect to something that's already there. And it's almost like layering drama on top of drama to bring in more drama. You know, it's like you can only go so deep in a trailer. And I think that,
right.
I think that Captain Marvel hit its mark much more. I mean, and obviously we haven't seen the movies, but it's hit its mark much more accurately than I think what this movie is going to do, because the movie's going to be far more fast-paced, I think, than what the trailer is indicating the pace of the movie's going to be.
Right. And what did we say? Captain Marvel had 109 million downloads in its first 24 hours?
Right.
This is...
And what did Phoenix get? I didn't see it.
I don't know in the first 24 hours, but now it came out Wednesday night, so like 48 hours, it has almost 10 million. Has 9.2 million. So nowhere close to it.
Yeah, not even close.
The trailer says it.
There are 100 million fewer.
They have, right? The rounding error of that of the other move of Captain
totally
Marvel. But so this trailer has a release date on the trailer emblazoned on the end, February 14th. But that is Valentine's Day, and they quickly fell out of love with whatever word they were receiving from it. And now it's saying that it's pushed now to June. It's pushed to the summer of next year. So I don't know how that bodes for, you know, it releasing, and somebody's joking online there that the movie's never going to be released. This is all we're going to see of it. So I hope not. I still want to see this movie.
I see what you did there. It was on Valentine's Day and they fell out of love.
Ah, that's right.
Yeah, that was a good one. All right, man, I think we beat up Dark Phoenix enough. They don't deserve it the way we're giving it. No, I mean, it looks okay, you know. I mean, I'm not going to say it's
right
terrible, but I think it could be better, you know?
Yes.
All right, mid-90s, and looks like we'll be moving into the past by about 20 years.
Right. So, mid-90s.
Another one from A24.
A24 keeps hitting it out of the park. I love their opening where they get the skateboards to make the A24 logo. You know, it's fun. It's tongue-in-cheek. It's probably the lightest thing about the whole trailer. The trailer's dark and heavy and gritty and still manages to eke out a little bit of hope, you know? So I think there's a lot of heart here, and I think, does this fall into your wheelhouse? Is this more in the line of a movie that entices you or interests you?
You know, that's a good question, because when I was this kid's age, I'm going to say I was probably like early to mid 80s, maybe like, you know, 84 to 86 kind of range. So yeah, mid 80s. And, you know, I work with teenagers all the time, you know, so I kind of see how they behave and the things they do, and, you know, teenagers just like...
But it's different now, right?
Well, but you know, at the same time, teenagers doing things like hanging out and not studying, you know? I mean, it's like, it's been the same forever, you know? Yeah, it's been the same forever. And it kind of gives me that LA vibe of skateboarding.
Yeah.
By the mid-90s, I was kind of out of this realm, you know? I mean, I was already in, what was I like, say, I was already in my mid-20s, let's say, right?
Uh-huh.
But I was certainly in this area, in this space, in like the mid 80s, and you know, and you know, when I was in high school and all that stuff. And skateboarding in the 80s was, or I, let me back up, skateboarding in LA in the 80s was probably more what you see in this trailer than what it was in Chicago at the time. But
right,
skateboarding was definitely in Chicago at the time. It just wasn't like a thing the way it was in California, you know, Los Angeles.
Well, you can't do it year round, right?
Yeah, there's that. And you know, I just think like, you know, just there's just culturally the cities are just so much different. You know what I mean? And so I can relate a little bit and I can't relate a lot. You know what I mean? Because I think where I was at this age, the culture of the city of Chicago where I grew up was much different than, you know, what I see in this trailer. And I look at at the age and stuff like that, and I see the kids I work with now even, and I'm just like, man, these guys are knuckleheads, you know? And I know I was a knucklehead at that point too in my life, but you know, I just think culturally it was just slightly different, you know? So I just have a hard time connecting, I think.
Oh, okay. I guess I was a late bloomer and I stayed kind of immature for longer than you did, because I feel like I was right here with them.
Oh, I'm still immature, don't get me wrong. Yeah, it just has nothing to do with skateboarding. Yeah.
Exactly. I was not skating, but we were definitely hanging out way too much. I would joke that we don't let our kids out of our sight at all. But on Friday at around 3 o'clock, I might stop off at my house, but I wasn't showing up back at my house until, you know, Sunday night.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'd be gone for 2 days, and we didn't have cell phones and we didn't have anything. So it was like,
dude, I ran the neighborhood, you know, not ran it like as in controlled it, but I mean, I ran it like as in like I was just all over the place. Like I ran around the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And it was like, and my parents had no idea what I was doing or where I was. And it goes back to the seat in the old Cutlass. Like, I don't know how I survived, you know, like when you think back on it. And then you look at your kids,
yeah,
and you're like, don't go near the street. When here I am, I'm like on the other side of town, taking the L train to wherever I'm going. I'm doing whatever I'm doing. You know, and I'm like, and now I mean, obviously my kids are a little bit younger than me at that time, but it's just like, I think back and I'm just like, my God, man, like, do I let my kids have that freedom? Maybe I need to, I don't know.
It's a different time, you know, like our kids are like, you know, we don't let them go to school without their little Mego watch. So they can call like Anne or myself or a couple or Frank and Barbara are on there. You know what I mean? So they have like limited three numbers they can call in an emergency. But it's, you know, we wouldn't even think of letting them out of our sight, even at the age, even in their teens. I don't even foresee that. I don't even know how that's going to be. I guess eventually it's going to happen and we're going to have to let go a little bit, but I don't know what that's like. I can't fathom it right now. And you know, I just think about,
I know Audrey's going to have a boyfriend and it's like, Dad, I'm going to go to his house and we're going to hang out, and you're going to be like, wait, what? So wait, you're going to be in this guy's house?
Nope.
Right, exactly.
You can come and hang out right here on this sofa. you could watch us podcast.
You could start dating when you hit 32. No, but you know, and that's a good point though. I mean, it's like, I don't know, like, how does that even work? I don't know. Like, we send Timmy with like snacks and food and water bottle and like all this stuff. And when I was a kid, it was just like, fend for yourself. They must have a fountain somewhere. You know, yeah. And like today we're just like, kiddo, here's a water bottle, fill it twice, drink it all. You know, it's like, what? I know. We're so like, I don't know, whatever. But
it's a different time. It's, you know, like you said, it's so many years removed. I love the idea that there's no parents in this whatsoever. So it's completely like disassociated from any kind of adulting.
Yeah. The parent is the older brother who beats him up every day.
And doesn't that older brother, he hits you like a Chet, right? He's like Weird Science.
Oh, know? Yeah. 100%. I thought of that like immediately. Yeah.
But yeah. And then have you ever seen the movie Kids?
No, I haven't. Is that another coming of age?
Yeah, it's another coming of age movie. It's a brutal, brutal film by Larry Clark. Larry Clark is more of an artist than a director.
Wow. Two brutals?
It's too brutal. It's one of those movies that you can only watch one time. But yeah, so this movie reminds me of like Kids, like with a heart, you know, with a little more compassion and a little less Casper.
So do you think, I don't know how to pronounce his name, Sonny Soljic. Do you think his character is loosely based on Jonah Hill? See, and he's a director. Do you think it's loosely based on him at that age?
It's got to be, right?
I mean, I would assume so. I mean, it seems as though that, you know, I mean, Jonah Hill must have been a skating kid who ran the neighborhood and did all the stuff he did, and he's writing a story about himself as a child, you know?
Yeah. So Jonah Hill was born, just IMDb a little quick here, born in Los Angeles, 1983. So I don't know. It seems a little young. It seems like he'd be too young for this, right? Like 12? He's not 12 in here.
Who, the kid? The kid's probably, I would say maybe 14.
15? Yeah, 14, 15.
Yeah. He's not driving yet, obviously.
Right.
So Jonah Hill would have been 12 to 14, you know, right in that area. So maybe, I don't know, maybe it is in his wheelhouse.
Maybe mid-90s sounded better than late 90s.
Yeah, or like mid-97, you know?
Or 19, he wanted to call it 1998, but that was, right. Wasn't really working.
I don't know. Are you going to see this?
I'm excited for it. I love the idea of Jonah Hill directing, writing it, and, you know, writing it from the heart. So we're excited about it.
Yeah, I think it's a cool movie. You know, I love coming of age movies. You know, Stand By Me was one of my favorites. And, you know, I mean, there's a number of them.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, some of the more comedic ones like Ferris Bueller and stuff like that. But I always love coming of age movies, because if you're young, you can relate, like directly relate, you know, because like that kid is speaking to you. And if you're older, you can relate because that kid was once you. You know what I mean? So it's like,
right.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those things where coming of age movies, I think, fits in to everyone's, you know, like wheelhouse. You know what I mean? So like, you know, it brings in nostalgia. It brings in the present. It brings in the past. It hits everybody, because everyone has had a coming of age experience. And, you know, it might not be finding dead bodies at a railroad track, or it might not be skateboarding, but regardless, you can relate to both movies very easy, I think.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting to say, like, maybe this is a mix of kids and Superbad, you know, because Jonah Hill in that great movie from 2007, Superbad, which I loved, that's just a straight up comedy, Judd Apatow. And then this kind of will mix some of the genres, you know?
Yeah. No, totally. I mean, it says it's a comedy, but I think it's like far deeper than a comedy.
Oh, it strikes you as a drama throughout. The score alone leaves you with, you know, just a heartfelt, well-placed movie, you know, the film that spans the drama of life.
Couldn't agree more. Yep. So Jonah Hill directing and writing and all this, and then he's in Maniac. How about we transition? So
yes. So I made a joke this week on Twitter that when I was reviewing this again for us for the show, A24, it's like a perfect fit. I think Netflix should make a move and buy Lamoury Theatres and A24 at the same time, and just wrap up this deal and have this art house at their own disposal. You know, you keep A24 doing their own thing. You give Netflix the matrix, the information matrix of what's working and what's not, even though A24 seems to have their finger on the pulse, you know, more than other studios. So it feels like a great fit, you know. Jonah Hill probably put in some cash or did some development with A24, and he's probably a producer on that. So he took some Maniac money and put it into A24. So there's already some synergy now with Netflix.
Well, and Netflix becomes the funding source for a production house that's already, like you said, they have their finger on the pulse. They're just the funding source. Keep doing what you're doing, because apparently you're doing it right.
It's working. Yeah.
And, you know, we're just going to give you the money to keep doing it, so you don't have to go out and try and raise funds, you know, raise cash.
A24 might be more frugal than Netflix. You know, I mean, it might. Where are you in Maniac?
So tonight we finished.
Oh, and we should say spoilers. We should say now we're going to head into a spoiler space. So it's the end of the show, and you can come back here if you've seen Maniac or if you've seen the first four episodes.
And I was going to say, like, if you've seen the first four episodes, you're good. If you haven't, then I mean, I don't want to get spoiled either. So, you know, like, what is it? 10 episodes, 8 episodes? How many?
10 episodes. And, yeah.
Okay, so we got 6 to go then. Yeah.
So, But I'll let you lead since you've only seen the four. I'll know where you are.
Okay. So this past week, we finally wrapped up Lost in Space. So we got that wrapped up. We wrapped up Fear the Walking Dead a week ago. We wrapped up... No, maybe that was it. Anyway, I mean, it takes us forever to get through shows, you know? So we're four episodes into Maniac. We just finished Jonah Hill as, you know, wearing the Warren Moon Houston Oilers jersey.
Yeah.
Yeah. With his... Well, okay. So let me ask you a question about mullets and economics. Do you know what an economic definition of a mullet is?
Like freakonomics?
No, I mean an economic, like an economic theory, right?
Oh, an economic definition. I do not know.
Well, you're regulated in the front, you're free market in the back.
I love that.
But Jonah Hill and Emma Stone, they just got done with the ringed lemurs and they were, you know, he was trying on like the fur coat and all this stuff. And then they go back and they break the window with the, what do you call it? The brick. And there's, and you have the fish and wildlife game or whatever it was, like chasing him down.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the machine guns. Then the guy goes after him with the bulletproof like fur coat, you know, but yeah. And, I mean, that's kind of where we are, where the Japanese researcher died at his desk and they thought he was sleeping, but he comes in, you know, and the guy and the other dude, now he had like the, what would you call it? Like the not synthetic.
Oh, wasn't that crazy?
Not synthetic. What is it? It's,
virtual.
Virtual. There you go. He had the virtual like sex doll, in a sense, because he had the thing on his crotch and he had, you know, he was squeezing the squeezy things.
The jelly things. Yeah.
The jelly things. And that's the boobs, you know, and whatever. But like, I mean, it's been okay so far. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of it, but it's entertainment.
All right, it's reaching its escape velocity. So you've only seen that kind of lower middle class vignette, right? And have you gone all the way to the end of that vignette?
Well, the end was they were in the chairs and the lights were blinking on them when they were in the seats with the brain scanner things. But one thing I wanted to mention, though, and you've mentioned this a few times about various movies, trailers, TV shows and stuff in the past, and you say like it's just like it's different enough to throw you off a little bit, right?
Right.
And I get the same vibe out of this movie, like, you know, you mentioned before, where if they advanced aerospace and medicine rather than advancing, you know, home computers and PCs and iPads and cell phones and all this stuff, like this is the kind of the world we would have. The one thing that I kind of get the vibe of this world is that it's just familiar enough to where it makes it different enough. And, you know, for anybody who's like traveled to, you know, like Europe or something, or who's traveled out of the country, like you leave the United States, and maybe for Europeans who listen, you know, you leave your city in Europe and you travel to the States or something, but you leave and like you get to Amsterdam or you get to Dusseldorf, you know, or you get to Helsinki or wherever you go in the world, you know, or Prague or wherever.
Sydney.
And as you as you arrive, like there's a McDonald's, there's a Starbucks, like they still have the same things, but there's like these subtleties that let you know you're not at home, right?
I mean, they got the same shit over there that they got here, but it's just there. It's a little different.
Example.
All right. Well, you can walk into a movie theater in Amsterdam and buy a beer. And I don't mean just like a little paper cup. I'm talking about a glass of beer. And in Paris, you can buy a beer in McDonald's. And you know what they call a quarter pounder with cheese in Paris?
They don't call it a quarter pounder with cheese?
Oh, man, they got the metric system. They wouldn't know what the fuck a quarter pounder is.
And what do they call it?
They call it Royale with cheese.
Royale with cheese.
That's right.
Royale with cheese.
A Royale with cheese. Right. Exactly. It's so familiar, and yet it's so different that you know you're not there. And that's what I get out of this, right? So when she's sitting there eating at a cafe in New York, like watching people walk past, and she goes and visits her dad in this like weird machine thing who's telling her that the combination changed. But the whole point is, it's like, it's just familiar enough and it's just different enough to where, like, okay, I get it. Like, I see where you're going.
Right.
Yeah. Like, the offices are still in the 70s.
Right. And to me, it's funny to think of like the conversations that maybe Carrie, the director and producer of this, had with Netflix, or maybe with his production team. And he's, you know, and you hand somebody like that $100 million and you say, here, make a TV show, 10 episodes, whatever you want to do, complete free reign. And you hand him $100 million and he says, okay, I have two very amazing actors and I have $100 million or whatever it is. I'm sure it's going to be around that ballpark. What can I do with this? You know, like, do I make just another True Detective? Do I make another show where we're just putting them through trials and tribulations? Or maybe I could make five $20 million movies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So in the end, I feel like that's what they did. They made five $20 million movies and they hung it together in this interesting kind of paper chain of the people, you know, the people paper chain that you hold out, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Where you cut the corners out and in the end, it's like, oh, it's guys holding hands. So that's what, you know, as we've gone through, the first vignette is the real world. And then the second vignette is this kind of white trash space. But I think they haven't handed the ringleaders off to the owner yet, right?
No, I don't even know who the owner's the woman who was in the nursing home or something. Yeah, we haven't gotten there.
And then they bridge. So a couple episodes, the vignettes that I'm calling them, they bridge a couple of episodes. So that's what makes this so bingeable. And I was talking about this at work this week with a couple people that had seen the whole thing and somebody who was like kind of not really on board with it. I think probably in your space where they've watched a few episodes, but they don't know where it's going and they don't feel like they're into it, but it goes.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with that. I understand that.
But as somebody who binged it in a couple of days, I am a big opponent to binging. Like when you binge something like Jack Ryan, which is a great TV show, you can't binge it because Jack is going through the paces of these eight episodes. And if you binge it, you compress all of these activities that's all Jack Ryan all the time, and you kind of get lost in what Jack Ryan's doing. But if you take five separate movies that span separate genres and use the same characters with the same actors, it makes it different enough that you could, I binged Maniac, but I know that you're about to go into this other story. And then after that story, there's another story. You know what I mean? So like you can compress it because the stories are so different from space to space. So I think Carrie's done something. He's done something in a world where people binge television to make a television show that is bingeable and yet discernible from episode to episode. So like right now, I thought that you'd already seen the end of this story, but this story actually bridges into the next episode. And then it ends early in that episode so that we can start the second the next vignette and finish out the next vignette across this episode and then the next episode.
And what I love about that too is we got the boys to bed a little bit later tonight than we typically do. And then we're about to record this episode.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, oh man, you know, it's like 8:30, you know, and boys are usually down by 8, but they got to bed at 8:30 and all this stuff. And I'm like, all right, well, we were going to do the fourth episode, but you know, we're going to be recording, so let's not do it. And you know, we're debating and all this stuff. So I'm like, well, let me just see how long it is. I'm like, 37 minutes. We got time. Let's do it. But if it were one of those like hour 5, hour 10 minute episodes, there would have been no way we would have been able to do it.
Yeah.
You know, but 37 minutes, like it's right there. Sure. Go for it. It's 37 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
So we did the episode, it got done, and then we went on and here we are recording.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So stick with it. Definitely like the third vignette. I think the vignettes build. So this vignette is Wait, what has happened on Emma Stone's side?
Well, I mean, it was her sister that she keeps wanting to get the A pill because her sister died in the crash, and the death in the crash is so horrible. But the positive is she keeps getting to revisit with her sister.
Right, and I think that's such a gripping moment when she explained that. I love the idea of saying, like, I hate it. It's my worst day, but I get to spend it with my sister, so I do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it is the epitome of grief, you know? It's just like such a tragic, tragic space to be in. And it informs her activity for the whole rest of this series, you know, that she's in this tragic, tragic space. And yet another beautifully shot, beautifully acted car accident from inside the car.
Yeah, you're right about that. No, I mean, it's, you know, so far it's okay. I mean, I think I'm more in the camp of the person that you work with who said that they don't really have a connection to it yet. I mean, I'll stick with it. We'll be done. And I'd say, how about we finish the recap maybe next week? Because we'll be done next week, or I'll make sure we're done next week.
Okay, cool.
And, you know, this is a good like mid-season or mid-series recap. And then, you know, we'll finish it up a week from now. And
awesome.
I don't know. We'll figure out the next one we're going to talk about.
Cool.
But overall, you know, just to summarize, like, it's entertaining. The acting's good. I think Jonah Hill, again, and I think I said this last week, he's a little melodramatic. I like Emma Stone's character. She comes off as, like, harsh, yet each vignette, she plays it a little bit different. Where Jonah Hill, each vignette, he comes off as kind of the same person. So, I don't know. We'll see how it goes. I mean, we'll finish it, you know, of course.
Yeah, awesome.
All right, man. So, how'd your beer finish?
My beer finished great. It's it stayed crisp. You know, the hops opened up as they do when it gets a little warm, and it's a very crisp, inviting finish.
Sweet. Yeah, I'd say mine very much so was good to the end. The chocolate came out more as it warmed a little bit.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it wasn't harsh on the palate. It smoothed out as you drank it, you know, and no aftertaste. Like, you know, you'd think like something as flavorful and as much chocolate as you have on it, mm-hmm. and as much of the malt and everything, you'd think it would just like hang with you, but it kind of dissipates quite quickly, actually. But so I would recommend this one. I mean, it's a Santa Maria Black Gold. Santa Maria, California, which is right near where I live. If you find it in a store, Ted, I'd go for it, man. It's a good one.
I saw this week you were drinking some Figaro Mountain too.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, I was debating. You've been talking about Figueroa for a little while. And yeah, you're talking about Untappd, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Trailer Junkies Jim is my profile on Untappd. And Hurricane Deck IPA, I drank the Lizard's Mouth, the Hoppy Poppy, and the Hurricane Deck.
Uh-huh.
And they're three different IPAs. And I think the Hurricane Deck is the one that you like, which is like that piney IPA, the less floral, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, and I was debating, should I review that one tonight? Because, you know, you've talked about it the past 2-3 weeks, and I'm just like, yeah, I'll go with this chocolate, you know? But yeah, I mean, Figaro Mountain Brewery is, you know, and again, we have no affiliation with any of these breweries, but yeah, it's great beer right down the road from us. All right, Ted. Hey.
All right. Well, definitely check us out at trailerjunkiespodcast.com or TJunkies Podcast on Twitter. And like Jim said, he's
Trailer Junkies Jim on Untappd. And you're what? Trailer Junkies Ted on Untappd?
I'm Trailer Junkies Ted.
There you go. Yeah.
That's right. But I won't be drinking as many beers. I'm down to this one beer a week for my 6 weeks. Have a great week.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing you in a few weeks. All like buff. You'll have like muscles. All right, man. You have a good night. Tell everybody I said hi.
Have a good night.
All right, later.
I will. Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.